Exploring the niche of home-built helicopters with two people who know them well. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guests today are Stu and Kathy Fields, who are well-known to experimental helicopter builders all over the world. They have a magazine now called Experimental Helo, which has been running for a couple of years, and 4 years. I have to note that where a lot of other print publications seem to be struggling, you guys are still full color and doing a great job. I'd like to welcome both of you, and I think I'll get the best story out of Kathy, so I'll start with Kathy on this. Kathy, how did you guys get interested in the first place in experimental helicopters?
I think Stu's always been interested in experimental rotorcraft. He had done a gyro, created a gyro, Benson, right? Yeah, Benson back in 65 down near Ken Brock, where we live now. And that interest just stayed. We were overseas, and you just can't build things when you're living on a Pacific island. Transportation is really a problem. And so the urge came back real hard, and we came back to the States to find a kit to build. And we traveled all over the United States for 7 months in our van, and looking at every kit, aviation piece that we could find, fixed wing, gyros, helicopters, and we discovered at PRA get-together, there was Canadian Home Rotors, and just struck the right chord. Low and slow, no hangar, build it at home, fly it from home, and bring it back home.
And very important in the helicopter world, maintain it yourself. Stu, I have to ask you this question because everybody asks this question about gyroplanes. Are they an aircraft for somebody who would fly a helicopter if they could afford to?
Probably. The gyrocopter is a lot easier to learn to fly and a lot safer because you're in auto rotation all the time. If the engine quits, there you are. You're in auto rotation. You've been in auto rotation for the last hour or however long you stayed aloft. The helicopter is more complicated and less forgiving. It's more exciting, though, that you can take vertical takeoffs and you don't have to have a long runway to get it off the ground. So that's what motivated me to switch. I did gyros way back in the 60s when you had to self-teach. I'm one of the survivors. Not very many of them did survive that era, but the helicopters just attracted me from get-go. I found out that the rotary wing aircraft took the heat bumps and the thermals in the desert much, much better than the fixed wing. I used to fly a fixed wing in the desert, and I had to keep my mouth shut all the time to keep my fillings in. Well, the rotorcraft would go through the same area. My 250-pound Benson would go through the same area, and all it would do is twitch it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I said, there's something in this for me. That, and I could keep it at home. I didn't need to pay expensive hangar fees and everything else.
I'm going to let either one of you field this question, whoever wants to go first. But I think for a lot of recreational pilots, a rotorcraft seems an odd match. I think most people think of aviation as a way to get someplace quickly or expand their weekend, their choice of weekend destinations, that sort of thing. What is it that attracted you, Stu, to rotor wing aircraft at all? Was it just the vertical takeoff and where you could store it?
That was one of the primaries, but I found I like to do low and slow. I had a what I call a stuck wing pilot's license from back in the late 50s. And yeah, every time I went flying, I was 6,500, 8,500 feet in the air and just sitting there. There was literally, even in those days, there wasn't much to do. The navigation was simple. Now with GPS, I'm sure I'd go to sleep. And there was not much to see up there. Now with a helicopter, I'm at 200 feet off the ground and I can see everything. And I'm never bored. I am always flying the helicopter and having fun. So I could still enjoy certain stuck wing aircraft, but the helicopter is my first love.
Kathy?
I followed suit, really. This is Stu's passion, and I was glad to discover something new in my life, really, is what happened. But I have done 20 hours of training in a helicopter. It was the most exciting, on-task, energizing experience I've ever had, and I've had a number. So this was exceptionally special. Every time I have flown a helicopter, I have not only learned something new, but had wonderful experiences that were, in some cases, peak experiences in my life.
We're talking with Stu and Kathy Fields of Experimental Helo Magazine, not Experimental Helicopter, Experimental Helo, and we'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, sitting here on a clear and unlimited day at UT99, which is West Desert Air Park in Utah, talking with Stu and Kathy Fields at a rotorcraft fly-in. And Stu and Kathy edit Experimental Helo Magazine. Stu, during the break, we were talking about the practicality of a rotor wing aircraft, and you talked about an experience on the way from California to Oshkosh. Relate that to our listeners, because I think it's kind of funny.
Everybody knows that rotorcraft really aren't a good aircraft to fly cross-country, and we've been told that over and over again, Ken Brock, specialists, all that. And we've got some friends who have a very fast, long, easy. Well, we all took off from California, headed to Oshkosh, and we had our helicopter on the trailer in back of the pickup with a camper in it. We're driving along there at 70 miles an hour, and I got a cup of coffee in my hand. They're doing 200 miles an hour in the air, but they run into IMC. They're down after 3 hours of flying, and they stay there for 2 days until the weather clears. This keeps up on and off all the way to Oshkosh, and we arrived at Oshkosh the same time they did.
Well, touche. I guess, and when you got there, they were taking cold showers, and you had your camper.
That's right. Not only that, they're in sleeping bags underneath this skimpy wing of this long easy, and we got a queen-size bed in the back of the camper.
Well, I think that I remember talking to the guys at Pilatus about the PC-12 turboprop and comparing it to very light jets. And they noted that even though the plane is slower, there are only a very limited number of circumstances, a particular range of distances, where a very light jet with less range will actually turn out to be faster than the turboprop. I think there are a lot of questions in aviation where if you do the math, the slower aircraft actually isn't at that big a disadvantage. Kathy, I want to ask you about getting into writing, because you got hooked into Stu's passion, and you guys ended up going to a lot of air shows. And I take it you've been RV, as in recreational vehicle RV people, for years and years and traveled that way. What made you decide to start writing about these things?
Really, it was the need to have something interesting to do once we got to any air show or air event or whatever you want to call them. The people are often the same. For me, they were talking about the same ships, often the same problems. For me, there weren't a lot of women around to have other conversations with. I wanted something that was very interesting that would keep me involved also in this. So it turned out that Popular Rotorcraft Association needed a new editor-publisher for their rotorcraft magazine. I applied and acquired the position in 2000 and did a lot of gulping since my only writing background has been from school teaching, English teacher to some extent, but basic school teaching. And no, I haven't otherwise. Oh, I can use a computer. That was the big deal. My computer skills were really good, including my graphic skills. So computers in 2000, remember, we did not have the internet extensively. We did not transfer files extensively. And we certainly did not have digital cameras. So the changes that have happened since from 2000 now to 2008 are monumental to our area. And in fact, without the internet, without the digitizing, we could not have either magazine. We could not have done what we have done. It's like a new world opening up because of the technology that suddenly became available.
You know, it's interesting because Aero News has been an example of a magazine operation morphing into an internet presence. But really, I had never really thought of it in those terms. The internet has made it possible for print publications, especially very niched ones like this, to, for example, get bids from all over the country for production costs and things like that. So there's a lot of ways in which that's changed things. So tell us who the contributors are to your magazine. Where do all these pictures and text come from?
Stu does the normal, extensive technical articles, unless someone wonderful, such as Mydell, comes along and says, oh, I have an article here. Would you like it? And we say, oh, yes, please, yes. Contributors come from all of our subscribers. They're
Ron Bartlett,
who also...
Yeah, Ron Bartlett in the UK is a steady contributor every issue of the magazine. We've got Ron's ramblings. We're trying to generate some in South Africa now and New Zealand and Australia, and we'll probably get one in Taiwan not too far from now. So the thing, we went international the first month of the magazine, though the thing exploded on us and scared us at first. We thought there's no way in hell we're going to be able to keep getting technical articles to keep in this magazine. And turns out to not be true. We're starting to get a backlog. We're finding people that are experts in their field, outstanding people, that are willing to write free. And that's what they have to do for our magazine, because we're not making a dime off of it.
Well, let's see if we can change that. My last question would be, how do people find out more about Experimental Helo Magazine? Is there a website where they can get a sample of what the content is like?
Yes, we have a website. It's experimentalhelo.com, www, of course. It is possible to subscribe or to renew, but more importantly, it is possible to find out what is currently printed. Some of the articles that we feel are important to be beyond just the print, so that everybody has access to it, like your anodizing article that is critical. We also have a complete list of table of contents for all our back issues and whether they're still available or not. Mm-hmm. We are expanding our electronic area slowly, very slowly, but we're expanding it. Hopefully, our international readers will go more and more electronic for having electronic subscriptions at a reduced rate for all the obvious reasons, but... that's about what it is.
The problem, we've tried to get a lot of people to go electronics, and they keep telling me I don't want to take my laptop into the bathroom with me.
Stu, Kathy, it's been great to see you here. It's always fun to run into you two at an event, and I love the way you travel and the life you live, and maybe I'll aspire to it one day. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
If you aspire to that, I'd go see a doctor or something. Get it corrected as fast as possible.
My guests have been Stu and Kathy Fields, who are the publishers and editors of Experimental Helo Magazine. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.